Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Thank you for your leadership in bringing us together on this budget and for your advocacy for working families and domestic programs related to working families. My only concern is the defense budget. We cannot be against endless wars and then fund those wars. We can't all stand and applaud when President Trump comes on the State of the Union and says, I want to end the foreign wars, and he gets the loudest applause, and then give him the money to continue those wars. He has had almost $200 billion of increases since President Obama left office. How is that consistent with a president who wants to withdraw from Afghanistan, from Syria, and foreign interventions? So I will be offering an amendment to make sure that we do not fund more foreign wars. Republicans and Democrats are sick and weary of these interventions, and we need to stop funding them.
We can't support ending foreign wars one day, then provide those wars with the very funding they need. I'll tell you, that is far too cogent an argument for Congress. April 4th, 2019. Thank you for joining me yet again. I had a great interview today with Vanessa Bealey on the White Helmet, specifically what's going on in Idlib, what's going on in Syria, and then really diving into the reality of the White Helmets connected to human trafficking, to organ trafficking, and Vanessa Bealey's extensive research on this topic. So I'll make sure you tune in. I'll probably be posting that tomorrow, because I'll have to get to it tomorrow. I want to make sure and add some information to it. But make sure you tune in for that. It'll be premiering tomorrow. Some very powerful information. But I have generally a quick show for you today. Or, you know, hopefully, if I don't talk too much. A few things I want to go over. We have more threats from Marco Rubio, actually claiming that Guaido, that if Guaido is arrested for his crimes, that the act of arresting him would be a coup d'etat. He literally has the nerve to call arresting Guaido the coup d'etat, which I find humorous. The U.S. is now trying to bribe the Venezuelan people with likely hollow promises that they will invest in Venezuela should they decide to turn on Maduro. Israel's demolished today the Bedouin village that I reported on yesterday. And this would be the, if you can believe it, the 142nd time this has happened to this specific group. The House, of course, passed the Yemen war bill today, but I will tell you why we really shouldn't get too excited just yet. But first, to begin today, a quick follow-up on a story with some new information that I thought was very important to cover. We actually discussed this on After Hours with Brian on his show, but this is important for multiple reasons. The story we recently reported on in regard to China and Venezuela, and this is some new information that makes it seem that maybe that was incorrect. And it's always important to follow up with stuff like this, and especially if it's something we may have gotten wrong. Now, this is an article from Moon of Alabama. No Chinese troops arrived in Venezuela. Now, I'll tell you why he says this. I'll tell you why this is title here. I actually don't believe that this is definitive, but he has some very powerful information here that makes it seem more than likely. I'm more so leaning now towards this specific flight did not have Chinese troops on it for two main reasons he points out. The link's in the article, you can earn the show notes, you can read it for yourselves. But the reality that the plane that arrived, and it did in fact arrive, he confirmed with 65 tons of aid, which in and of itself counters the ridiculous narrative of the United States, but that the plane itself was not actually licensed to be carrying people. So that first makes it seem that that's not likely. And then second, the point that he includes here is the picture that was shared of the people that were supposedly there. This was shared on Twitter, picked up by Al Mazdar News, then picked up by Zero Hedge and shared, but showing you with two Venezuelan troops next to three different people in the supposedly in the Chinese military, each from a different area of the military, the Navy, the Air Force, the military, or excuse me, the Marines. So the point being that there's no reason that they would send one person from each branch on this humanitarian group, humanitarian trip. But see, it's even just that in and of itself doesn't mean it's a guarantee that they're not there. You see what I'm saying? But based on his evidence and based on the research, it seems more than likely that they're not. Doesn't mean that they haven't been there from before, but this one trip and this one plane, it's more than likely that they didn't show up there. But Maybe that's the deception. Who ultimately knows? The report still stands. They still claim that they did arrive. But Moon of Alabama is very trustworthy. I greatly respect his research. So based on that, I wanted to bring that information to you just in case, you know, for moving forward, for having the correct information. But I wouldn't put it past him to have made it there, to already have been there. China is supporting Venezuela. So at this point, it's undecided as far as I can tell. But I felt it was important to bring that to your attention right off the bat. So let's get into the first story of the day, the big story, the one that it's everywhere in the news today in regard to the Yemen war bill. And why I think it's not exactly what, well, you know this if you watched this show from before. One of them you've already seen, but reasons why I don't think this is exactly what we think it is. If in fact, Trump even doesn't, it passes Trump's desk, which is the final stop. He said he was going to veto it. This coming from The Hill, which first place I saw it. House ignores Trump veto threat, which he has. He's openly said, which is ridiculous when you think about it, that we're talking about the most catastrophic humanitarian crisis in the world, 100% due to U.S. and Saudi actions on the ground there, and UAE and their allies involved. And that the American people don't want to be involved, or involved in any foreign war for that matter. Congress has collectively passed this bill from the Senate and the House, and Trump still says, nah, I'm going to veto it. I don't care what Congress or the American people or the Yemeni people or the world want. I don't care. I'm going to veto it. It just shows you the ridiculous nature, the claim that we actually have influence over these things. It's ridiculous. But he approves the bill ending U.S. support for the Yemen war, which I think is inaccurate. It doesn't end U.S. support for the war. It gives an opportunity for that, if people were honest, but that's not what's going to happen. That's my opinion here. Now, the House passed its House Joint Resolution 37 today with the intent to end U.S. military support for the Saudi war. And see, this is, again, the Saudi-led war is the verbiage that I get comfortable in saying. But the reality is, as people such as Ben Norton, a great journalist today, have made very clear, this is a U.S.-led war. With the Saudis, with the UAE, with all of their partners. But this is a U.S.-led war, and we have to stop pretending that it's not. As they've roundly pointed out that if the United States and the UK today said that told Mohammed bin Salman that he had to stop, the war would be over tomorrow. And this has been confirmed by mainstream pundits as well. So basically, with the intent, this resolution had the intent to end the support for the U.S.-led war in Yemen, sending it to President Trump's desk, and possibly forcing him to issue his second veto of his presidency. Now, there's also a reason why I think that may not happen, and I'll get to that in a moment. Now, the resolution passed 247 to 175, with 16 Republicans siding with Democrats. And then Justin Amash, the only person apparently just going in present, which is a new thing I'm seeing. It used to just be an abstention, but now you just sign your name and you don't vote, but you're there, which is interesting. That's basically an abstention as far as I can tell. But ultimately passes with bipartisan support. Now, The Hill, of course, writes in their article, Thursday's vote was the first time since the War Powers Act was passed in 1973 that both chambers of Congress passed a resolution using this law, and was the culmination of a years-long effort propelled in recent months by lawmakers' fury, they claim, at Saudi Arabia over the killing of U.S.-based journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Period. Oh, interesting, The Hill, that you don't include the destruction of the Yemeni's people, the 20 million people starving to death, the continual bombardment of civilian infrastructure and murdering of families and bombing buses full of children. No, it's only about Khashoggi. That's what they want you to believe. This is what these kind of groups do. It's frustrating. It's insulting that they would just sweep over the most important part of what this entire bill is about. The actual bill talks about what we're talking about, the people suffering on the ground, but no, The Hill is talking about they killed Khashoggi, so yeah, Congress has to get up in arms about that because they killed a journalist or, you know, a CIA asset, you know, the reality of the story. But Ro Khanna, a Democrat who was the chief sponsor of this, the chief's House sponsor, he said that his motivation for the bill was very simple. And as much as I disagree with Ro Khanna on plenty of things, as well as pretty much any politician you could point to, as always, credit where credit is due. And the things he's doing around Yemen and plenty of other things, I completely agree with. He's taking some hardline stances here against the general opinion, such as things about Israel or things about Yemen or Syria or Venezuela, for that matter. But he said his motivation was very simple. Quote, I don't want to see 14 million Yemenis starve to death. How can you disagree with that? Who is actually voting in opposition to this kind of a thing? There are some. And of course, as many are reporting, and here's why I disagree with this, many are coming out with, you know, historic puts, you know, ends U.S. complicity in the world's worst humanitarian crisis in Trump's hands. But does it really? It definitely puts this into Trump's hands. He has the option to veto it. But is this really a historic vote ending complicity for the war? Is that what's happening? Clearly, it's a good step. Regardless, as I always point out, the attention it's getting, the fact that we're even discussing ending a war that they didn't even want us talking about is a huge success. And that's because of you in the chat. That's because of the independent media forcing this into the mainstream discussion. As we've jokingly pointed out numerous times, the joke about MSNBC covering Stormy Daniels 450 times in 1 year and not a single time even discussing Yemen. And now here we are. That's because of you, because of the independent media. Do you really think they would have cared to talk about it after they ignored it an entire year during one of the most catastrophic years? You think they'd be talking about it now if we didn't make them? Come on, that's ridiculous. But here's why I don't think this is exactly what they want it to be. And I get that a lot of people want this to become something. We want to feel like we're succeeding. And again, we are. We can take a win from it from what it is. But there's reasons that this is not exactly what we want it to be. And this is what I've pointed out numerous times. This title of being that this is going to end complicity in the war is not accurate in the least. And for two reasons, really, two main reasons. First, as you can see, because of the loophole built into this bill. It reads, Congress hereby directs the president to remove United States armed forces from hostilities in or affecting the Republic of Yemen. That should be period. Period. That's what we're talking about. But they, for whatever reason, had to add, except United States armed forces engaging in operations directed, not even against, but directed at Al-Qaeda or associated forces. So basically anybody that they deem somehow affiliated with Al-Qaeda, which by the way is all the groups the U.S. is currently working with all over the world, Al-Nusra, Hayatir al-Sham, is all connected to Al-Qaeda. But except if they're engaged, the directed at is important because that means that they can say, oh yeah, well we hit that school bus or we hit that, you know, barn full of food for the Yemenis people, or we bombed those fishing boats. Oh, well, we were directing it at Al-Qaeda, and apparently we got it wrong. Or, oops, we missed. Just what they used to say. But see, this is a loophole for one main reason. They can simply shift their narrative, as they've done before. All of a sudden, it becomes, oh, well, now we're fighting Al-Qaeda, right? But for those of you who watch this show, you already know why that kind of claim is so preposterous, which I'm going to get into in a second. But the reality is all they have to do is shift over to saying now the things we're currently doing as we're bombing civilians are now all of a sudden about Al-Qaeda. So that's all they have to do. They can keep doing everything they're doing as long as they change what they say they're doing. Game over. We've seen this countless times. But again, for those that watch this show, you know why the idea of them even fighting Al-Qaeda in the first place is completely preposterous. These operations supposedly against Al-Qaeda are truly an insult to your intelligence. We first know beyond a doubt that the U.S. has worked with extremists in the past. That's a fact. But we have undeniable evidence today as well that the U.S. is doing so again. Right now, with Al-Qaeda in numerous locations, while continuing to use them as the justification for the illegal wars in those very locations. I mean, it's absolutely absurd. The only reason people don't see how absurd it is because they don't deign to look. They blindly listen to what they're told. Now, it's very important to understand the documentable history that the United States and its allies has in creating or using religious fundamentalists. Now, some would actually say the religious part of that is the part of the deception, but religious fundamentalists against American adversaries in the Middle East specifically. There's a great video that I saw today, I believe, from In the Now, listed a whole bunch of examples. They used the Muslim Brotherhood against Arab nationalists in the 1950s. They used, which we've talked about numerous times, the U.S. and its allies used the Mujahideen against the Soviet Union in Afghanistan in the 1980s, working directly with Osama bin Laden. Of course, the Mujahideen and bin Laden, working off of that U.S. support, later literally gave birth to Al-Qaeda. And this with CIA stooge Osama bin Laden at the lead. Of course, in 2011, the U.S. used Al-Qaeda-linked Islamists in Libya against Gaddafi, who we just talked about yesterday are the groups that are currently in control of Tripoli that the popular movement is about to try to overthrow. And that's the group that is selling open slaves and making this what was once the nation with the highest quality of life in all of Africa, now the group that is completely a failed state operating with terrorism and selling open slaves. because the U.S. chose to use terrorists to try to overthrow the country to liberate them. And of course, the U.S. has been using al-Qaeda-linked jihadists to try to overthrow Assad for years, which is a simple fact. Again, I pointed out we have someone running for president right now who is openly acknowledging the fact that the U.S. armed and funded terrorists for that exact purpose. It's not a secret, people. It's simply choosing to acknowledge the reality or continuing to put your head in the sand. Now, of course, funding the terrorists against Assad directly contributed to the growth of al-Nusra, the group that, again, the other affiliate in regard to specifically as well, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham in Idlib. Of course, the U.S. coalition is arming and supporting as well I wanted to show you, not that I even necessarily need to. I feel like I've shown you this 1,000 times. But the reality, and this was actually just discussed in the Now video as well. And this, it's just important for people to remember, because it when it gets into the independent media versus the mainstream media, these discussions where, oh, well, that's fake news because that's independent media. We have to get past this idea, because the mainstream media as well has acknowledged these different concepts countless times, as I've shown you, that they continue to work with these groups, even while people like the Associated Press or Zero Hedge, for that matter, has discussed this numerous times. The Associated Press is the biggest one, that they've reported themselves that the United States with Saudi Arabia is currently working with terrorists on the ground. And it's just something that we need to get past. Here, I grabbed it real quick so you could see it. Let me actually just change the... There we go. And again, for those that... I mean, this is in the show notes for you to see. This, you guys have seen this if you watch the show regularly. U.S. coalition cooperates with al-Qaeda in Yemen. Associated Press confirms. I mean, think about how preposterous it is to pretend that they're fighting it while we have evidence right now that they're literally working with them on the ground. Again, it should insult you at the end of the day. Now, the second reason this claim is false, and this is a big one for me, that the claim that the bill will end U.S. involvement in the Yemen war is because of the surreptitious additions of text about Israel and fighting anti-Semitism in a bill about Yemen. Again, about Yemen, a bill about ending a war in Yemen, and yet they decide to stuff in concepts about Israel and fighting anti-Semitism. Why and how does that make sense at all? The first one you can see here, as it says, it's Congress hereby... Oops, sorry. See, I'm jumping around on these images and I messed it up. Here's the one. This is the one I was wanting you to see. Now, the first one, it says Section 3, Rule of Construction Regarding Continued Military Operations and Cooperation with Israel. I mean, really, first of all, if Israel wasn't in some way involved in what's happening in Yemen, which we know if you're paying attention, why would this be involved? They're aware that something here could potentially hinder some future construction operation or settling operation in the area they're currently trying to take over. And it says, nothing in this joint resolution may be construed to influence or disrupt any military operations and cooperation with Israel. I mean, that is just a caveat that is added that's unnecessary, because they know that this may be used in some way to hinder what Israel wants to do. Why is this what our U.S. politicians are even involved in? Why is what they're first concerned with, instead of ending a catastrophic U.S. war, is making sure that anything that they may do could somehow trip up Israeli government? I mean, again, the ridiculous, how often we have to point out that their influence over U.S. policy is overwhelming, to the point to where they force them to put in concepts about Israel in bills that are not even related, at least as we can see in the moment. Now, the second part is the one that is the most staggering to me, the most unbelievable. Why in the world would we need verbiage about anti-Semitism, about fighting anti-Semitism, in a bill about ending a war in Yemen? I mean, again, this is members of Congress are saying this. This should be very baffling to you if this is the first time you're seeing this. This is literally in the bill. It says 11. It is in the about ending a war in Yemen. Number 11. It is the national security interest of the United States to combat anti-Semitism around the world. Okay. Interesting. I don't see how that relates in any way, shape, or form to Yemen, but let's maybe go forward. Let's see. It says, because A, anti-Semitism is a challenge to the basic principles of tolerance, pluralism, and democracy, which that's quite a stretch, and the shared values that bind Americans together, somehow fighting fighting as they want the term to only mean racism against Jews is somehow important to the shared values that bind Americans together. I mean, am I not the only one that's seeing how increasingly this is inching in a very clear direction where apparently American values are about what's good for Israel? And it goes on to say, B, there has been a significant amount of anti-Semitic and anti-Israel hatred that must be strongly condemned. Okay, how does that relate to Yemen? C, there is an urgent need to ensure the safety and security of Jewish communities, including synagogues, schools, cemeteries, and other institutions. Okay, whether you agree with it or not, how does that have anything to do with Yemen? Number 12, a whole new category. It is in the foreign policy interest of the United States to continue to emphasize the importance of combating anti-Semitism in our bilateral and multilateral relations, including with the United Nations, European Union, and blah, blah, blah. Maybe this is the idea that this, so any country that the U.S. in the future decides to overthrow and occupy, they're going to be forced to adhere to these Israeli principles. That's what it seems like. But apparently it's in the national security interest and the foreign policy interest. They had to include both of those. So basically, all around, it is in the U.S. interest to fight Israel's battle. Can we please recognize the absurdity of this? Of the absurdity of adding things like this to a bill about wolves, or in regard to Yemen, or a bill about wolves, or a bill about the farm bill. This is designed to be deceptive. And if we can't recognize by now what's really going on, you're simply not paying attention. All of this, by the way, was added after it left the Senate, which I found very important. I have both links in the show notes for you to look at. And this is for those that who are, you know, trying to pinpoint the largest issue in all of this. So both those texts, both the Israel text and the text about fighting anti-Semitism and making it a U.S. foreign policy and national interest in a bill about ending a war in Yemen, all of it was added after the Senate passed the bill without that text. So that's very relevant to me. This is what our politicians are doing with our tax dollars, if you're an American, all while, you know, making up ridiculous lies and accusations about Venezuela. Clearly they care about U.S. interests. And speaking of Venezuela and ridiculous lies and accusations, here's Marco Rubio yet again. Arrest of Juan Guaido would amount to a coup d'etat, which is unbelievable. A coup d'etat. Literally what's happening is a coup d'etat, and should they arrest the man trying to carry that out, that's what they deem a coup. I mean, this is just, you know, ignorance is strength, peace is war. They're literally trying to rewrite the meaning of these things. That's why they call Maduro a usurper. I mean, please take a moment and look up what the term usurp means. He didn't take it by anybody. They can claim that his election is illegitimate, but by the very definition of the word they keep using, he didn't take it from anybody. Especially because they didn't even run next to him, which is just, it's ridiculous because they chose not to. Humorous to me. I mean, these people are just embarrassing. Now, as I just reported, the Constituent Assembly has lifted the parliamentary immunity of the self-declared President Guaido, opening the door for criminal charges to be brought against him. And they also barred him from public office for 15 years. Now, Guaido violated a court-ordered travel ban on February 22nd when he crossed into Colombia, you know, to lead efforts to force humanitarian aid across the border, which it turned out to be, you know, barbed wire and nails and things that weren't important. You know, aid coming from U.S. and Guaido. He later attended a Lima Group meeting in Bogota and traveled to Brazil, Paraguay, Ecuador, and Argentina before returning to Venezuela on the 4th. All of this, which was illegal. Now, the travel ban against Guaido, as well as an asset freeze, which I've reported on recently, were also reinforced by the Constituent Assembly on Tuesday. Both extended, they claim, quote, until the investigation against him is over. You know, very tyrannical thing to do, to only, you know, to not just seize it and take it from him, but to say, oh, we'll hold this, and when it's over, we'll give it back. You know, tyrannical. Two criminal investigations being led by the Attorney General's office are currently open as well. One related to his unconstitutional behavior as a public official, you know, trying to overthrow the government, and the other regarding his role in the sabotage against the electric grid. Now, U.S. officials have now weighed in with Florida Senator Rick Scott, warning Maduro that the U.S. will not stand by if something happens to Guaido, which is what they've been saying from the very beginning. Senator Marco Rubio also decided to chime in that any attempt to arrest the opposition leader would amount to a coup d'etat, he said, which would face consequences, which is just, it's just ridiculous. And again, they want something to happen so they can use it. They probably want him to get shot so they could use it. They don't care about people. That's clear by their actions everywhere else. So if they arrest him and put him, which I find humorous though, arrest him to put him through the legal process to put him in, you know, take him to court, because that's what a dictator does. It's ridiculous. It's just, it's going to be very hard for them to sell that that's somehow some kind of dictator move. But trust me, they will do it. And Marco Rubio foaming from the mouth, clearly embarrassing himself with all of his ridiculous claims and being lies, continually shown to be lying. This is them grasping at straws, trying to make this failing coup turn into something other than it clearly is. Now, on a side note, which I also find very interesting, Tuesday's Constituent Assembly, the session that they had, also saw the approval of the 2019 to 2025 Homeland Plan, it's called, for Venezuela. And they set forward a number of policies and goals to be achieved during President Maduro's second term. And guess what? The targets include reaching 5 million homes built by the housing mission for, you know, people that don't have homes, having 8,000 communes set up, and extending the pension system to the entirety of their elderly population. Gee, what a dictator. What a tyrannical leader. The reality, again, do these things probably have some way that they benefit him and his corp and his government? Of course, there's corruption everywhere. But they're also helping people. These things aren't happening here. I'm not even implying that I would want that system versus this system. I don't want any government. But the reality is these are things they would never tell you, that they're intentionally and have in the past given free homes, free healthcare, free education. Very similar to what Gaddafi was doing, and they did the same thing to him. We have to recognize the reality. And this is what they're trying to accomplish. And what the U.S. wants is for them to overthrow the government, create another failed state, and then they'll throw a little bit of money at them. Right? Like they're saying, oh, we'll give you a little bit of money that we stole from you to help out your government. And speaking of that, for the very next article, which is exactly what this is about, coming from Anti-War, White House aid the U.S. to pump money into Venezuela after regime change. Oh, how generous of you. So you steal their money and then give them back a little bit of it once they decide to overthrow the government that you don't like. I mean, it's unbelievable. And this is just as ridiculous. They claim that, oh, like when Maduro is handing out, you know, their clap, the food packages, when he's giving them things for the people, they deem that bribery. Oh my God, look at Maduro helping people. He's just trying to bribe them to get him on his side. But that's also called, you know, a government helping its people. What they're doing here is literally what they accuse him of, which is like every step of the way. You know, accuse them of that which you are guilty. Classic U.S. policy. Now, they're trying to bribe them, the Venezuelans. Please, jump to our side, and we'll put a little bit of money into your government. Or rather, you know, to something in Venezuela yet to be determined. I'm sure we can trust you. But in a special briefing for the Christian Science Monitor, President Trump's top economic advisor, Larry Kudlow, revealed that the administration is already working right now with banks internationally in plans to greatly increase U.S. investment in Venezuela if there's a regime change. Funny how that works out. It's exactly like Pompeo we just reported on, how he's already discussing about, oh, how here's how we're going to rebuild the economy, and we're going to rebuild Venezuela, already planning for after this regime change that's clearly not going to happen, unless they invade the country, which, by the way, the majority of Americans don't want, the majority of Venezuelans don't want, the majority of the world doesn't want, but it still may happen, because they've done it before. Now, President Trump has demanded, because, you know, he has the authority, he's demanded immediate regime change. You need to switch all around. I want the person in charge that I want in charge. It amounts to about a tantrum here. Because with Venezuela's president, right now, Maduro, they want him to be replaced by Guaido. Because he's their guy. They trained him. They coaxed him into doing this. He's controlled by them. He is their puppet. As is very clear. And of course, he's seen as much more pro-U.S., come in and I'll let you have all the oil. I'll let you privatize everything because that's good for Venezuelan people. We've seen that example throughout other countries. Or no, we haven't. Now, Kudlow says there is a two-day plan to see huge influxes of cash if and when they overthrow Maduro. This is literal bribery. They're saying, look, we'll give you something. We can't tell you how much or what it will go to, but we'll give you something over the process of 2 days if you all just revolt against Maduro. Now, this is keeping with the Trump administration's belief that it can effectively shut down the economy of a disobedient nation when it chooses to, and then just miraculously turn things around at a moment's notice once they comply, which is ridiculous and quite naive. And probably not naive. I don't think they even concern themselves with whether or not they can turn the economy around. They just say these things to get their agenda covered. Now, whether the U.S. can actually revive Venezuela's economy, you know, with a single round of two-day investment after all the U.S. has done to destroy it, is unclear at best. As the author rightly points out, since this is the carrot the U.S. is dangling in diplomatic operations with nations like North Korea, a failure with Venezuela here could hurt U.S. their negotiating position. Which is a very lucid point. That's maybe why they're so desperate to force this through. Something we have to consider, at the very least. But the problem is that short of a military intervention here, it seems clear, at least to me, that there will not be any regime change, especially since Russia is not going anywhere. But instead of regime change, we will sadly, as usual, see more U.S. of the U.S. and its allies essentially punishing a nation's government, and by direct extension, that government's people, simply because they did not want to be ruled by U.S. interests. And as I just said in a recent show, and Russia is echoing here today or yesterday, why should they leave Venezuela when the U.S. has troops everywhere in the world? I mean, how absurd is that? They literally have bases scattered everywhere encircling Russia, and yet they're not allowed to go to their allies' country. It really is ridiculous. And again, as I've continued to try to point out, it always stems back to the simple, reductive, ridiculous concept that Russia, bad guy. No logic, no deeper thought behind it. They say Russia, bad guy, so everything else is okay. No evidence, no facts to back it up. As usual, like with Iran and everything else they try to say, they just say, oh yeah, that's a bad guy. They do bad things. Literal Trump quote. Iran, they do bad, bad things. Oh, I'm sold. I'm sold. But to end today, while they want you focused on all this smoke and mirrors, all of this, the baseless claims and demonstrable lies about U.S. adversaries in order to plan its after regime change profiteering, in the last article's case in regard to Venezuela, the next story, if it had taken place in Venezuela or Syria, would be headline news on every channel for a week, but not when it's the criminal, when the crime is being committed and the criminal is Israel. Now, this is coming from Middle East Monitor, which we just discussed yesterday, sadly, that this was about to happen. And now, of course, Israel demolishes Arakeb Bedouin village for the 142nd time. I was unaware of that yesterday. I knew it had been demolished before, but 142nd time. I mean, really let that process for a moment, that these people have been displaced. Not once, not twice, but 142 times from their home. Not even their original home, from the home that they made after they were moved from their home. And then 141 times, or rather maybe even two from this location, they were moved away forcefully with bulldozers and weapons and military. It's just, it's very disgusting to see that this happens and nobody seems to care about it, at least in the West. Now, Israeli bulldozers, I shouldn't say that, plenty of people do, but you know what I mean in regard to the mainstream sphere is what I was referring to. Now, Israeli bulldozers demolished the Bedouin village of Arakeb in the Negev Desert in southern Israel, as they reported for the 142nd time. This happened today. Locals reported that Israeli bulldozers, escorted by Israeli police forces, demolished residential structures and tents, the other makeshift things that they had going on, of the Arakeb villagers, leaving women, children, and the elderly without any shelter whatsoever. They don't seem to care about that, because they're trying to make room for their Jewish settlers. Now, villagers said that they insist on remaining in their village, adding that they will keep rebuilding their village regardless, which is what they've apparently done 141 times. Now, the Israeli demolitions of Arakeb are carried out in attempts to force the Bedouin population, as I recently reported, to relocate to government zone townships, basically forcing them out of their homes to go where the Israeli government wants them to go, where they can be forced into a smaller area and be controlled, watched, and then using the territory they want to grow their specifically Jewish state. As Netanyahu himself has made very clear, Israel is the state of the Jews, and that's it. That's why we see things like this happening. Destroying homes, hurting people, killing people, because they're not Israeli. Or more appropriately, no, not Jewish. But at the end of the day, we know that this movement is led from a Zionist political point. It should be upsetting to see how many people are struggling here. Now, like the 43 other Bedouin villages that are apparently, quote, unrecognized by Israel, which we touched on yesterday, it's simply a choice by the Israeli government to just choose not to recognize that they live there so they can then move them when they see fit, which they've been doing. But like 43 other villages that are unrecognized by Israel, Erekib does not receive any services from the Israeli government and is consistently, regardless of that, subjected to the threats of expulsion and home demolition. So they're not even taking part in anything that the Israeli government would hand down to them. And yet they still deem them in control. These apparently unrecognized villages were established in the Negev soon after the 1948 Arab-Israeli War, following the creation of the State of Israel. The illegal occupation. When apparently an estimated 750,000 Palestinians were forcibly expelled from their homes and turned into refugees, some of which now are being moved again for the 142nd time. Now, many of the Bedouins were forcibly transferred to the village sites that they're now being moved from again during the 17-year period when Palestinians inside Israel were governed under Israeli military law, which, of course, ended shortly before Israel's military takeover of Gaza and the West Bank, including Jerusalem, sorry, in 1967. Now, more than 60 years later, the Bedouin villages have yet to be legally recognized by Israel. And right now, after the ones that are still there live under constant threat of demolition and forcible removal. Now, remember that they were moved here after they were forcefully removed from their homes. And since then, they've just not been recognized, right? But you recognize that they were moved there to begin with by the Israeli government. So they put them there, and then they come back years later and say, oh, well, now you're not recognized. You got to get out now because now we want that territory as well. It's the reality. I mean, this is the reality on the ground that they do not want you talking about. And it's not just Israel, but clearly, they, as I pointed out, were emboldened by Trump's recent proclamation, and they're on overdrive right now, committing all the crimes they possibly can. It's offensive. Now, should we choose to speak out about how truly horrible and malicious this is, of course, we would be deemed anti-Semitic. Because, you know, one cannot possibly care about the rights and lives of Palestinians unless they just hate Jewish people. Or this is what they would have us believe. This is why U.S. politicians secretly added text about Israel and anti-Semitism, or, you know, by their definition, anti-Zionism, to a bill about Yemen. Because their driving force is simply no longer the needs and concerns of the American people. And I'll tell you, it is about damn time that we wake up to this reality and to at least try to begin to rebuild what they stole from each and every one of us. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I appreciate you all being here. As always, if you would like to support this channel, there's numerous ways you can do so in the show notes. We have our Question Everything t-shirt that you can buy from Truth Clothing in the show notes below, and it supports our channel because we are people funded. I could not do this without you. And I meant what I said earlier, that the change that we're seeing specifically in regard to Yemen is because of you, because of your efforts to share the link, to talk with people, to get the word out there. I'm just one man with a camera. It's because of all of you that this information is making a difference. So truly, thank you for being here. I love you all. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.